You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek This Out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Trek This Out, your number one podcast for all things Trek. I'm Izzy Davis, and you might recognise me from our Davis Flyer spin-off podcast. I've taken the helm for today's pod, and I'm really looking forward to sharing Picard Season 3, Episode 6, The Bounty, with you. Joining me on our voyage today are Suki, Andrea, and Deb. Hello, everybody!
Woo! Well done! Woo!
First of all, what are your initial quick thoughts about this episode? Let's start with you, Suki.
Oh, I love this episode. Loved it. As somebody says on the internet, it's all Star Trek fan porn. And, you know, I just jizzed all over it. Sorry, Bab. Let's start with the how we're going to carry on.
Okay, Andrea?
So, I tend to be the Easter Bunny collecting eggs. And there were so many Easter eggs, I don't know what to do with them. I've got lots and lots and lots of notes, and they are all Easter eggs. And that always makes me happy.
And Deb?
I loved it as well. I was watching it from a hotel room on a small iPhone, and I haven't managed to look at it again just. So I haven't managed. I won't have many geek points, I don't think, in this one. Also, I was born and brought up in Oxford, so I'm a bit distracted by Cambridge winning the boat race at the moment. But they might sink, so never mind.
So for
as a graduate, I love the double thinking personally, so you know, here's hoping.
I bought myself a tiny bottle of Prosecco to celebrate being back on the pod, because I missed you last week.
Well,
I missed you as well.
You might be interested to know I was also born in Oxford.
So, oh, whereabouts?
Wolvercote.
Not far. Yeah, Wolvercote, where the tongue
is. Wolvercote, Headington Way.
Yeah, oh, right, yeah, I know. Kidlington.
Yeah.
I'm from Kidlington. Yeah.
Learned something new about me there.
Okay, so what did you think of the episode as well, Izzy?
Oh, I loved it. I really did. I thought it was great. I think it's been my favourite so far this season. Okay, I want to start us off with this idea of the reunion of the TNG cast, all in like one place. So we saw Geordi for the first time this season of Picard. So that was, I think, quite exciting because I was first introduced to Star Trek through the Next Generation. So I was very excited to see all of that happening.
I think that's really interesting because obviously we're watching this as people who've kind of waited 30 years for this to happen, and it's certainly the TV show, and it's a long time since Nemesis. And I think it's really nice that someone who kind of wasn't born first time round is still really excited to see these people getting back together. That's making me super happy.
That's I'm glad to hear it, I guess. Yeah.
Well, the thing with Geordi, though, this episode, I just found it a bit strange that he was so, what was the word, aggressive? Not aggressive. Yeah, he was aggressive, but it's the same thing that happened with Riker to a certain degree. He suddenly seemed to turn on Picard. You know, you can't do this. Why are you doing this? Yet for years and years, they worked side by side, and they just seemed to be in sync and be able to do these sort of things together. Deb?
Yeah, I think Oxford are losing.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. I'm going to sulk now. I think it's about showing that the characters have evolved, that there is a gap between the time gap, really. It took his daughters to remind him who he was, I think. There's a lot of themes, like being a parent and how that changes you, grieving, and family. I think there's a lot of themes that have been throughout the series. And although it was a bit of a shock at the time, I think it was the fact that he got over it so quickly that made it a bit jarring. But we should mention also Shaw geeking out. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah. That'll be my answer to everything now at work. Yeah, it's been a weird week. Is he? And well, stop being so, Izzy, stop being so good, you're showing the rest of us up.
I think, yeah, I was going to talk about this idea of, like, parenthood, and you, like, this has been introduced through Picard and Jack, but I think that that was a very parent reaction to the situation. He wasn't thinking as, like, someone who worked for Starfleet. He was thinking as a father, I think, and I think maybe that's why it was less like, oh, I don't know what's happened. It was like, you know, because we're not used to seeing him in that capacity. So it was a bit like, we're not used to it. Suki?
Yeah, I could see that. Him as a father saying, look, you're putting my child in danger. I need you to stop. But he does, there's still the fact that normally he would still help him. He wants Sydney off the ship, but he would still help them. But he wasn't helping. He was just being, yeah, I understand all this, but Starfleet is all looking for it. I don't really want you guys here. I'll have my daughter, but please leave. It wasn't a case of him turning around and going, I will help you to do this, that, the other. I'll get you your, what were they looking for? Transponder, clown transponders, right? And I'll help you get that. But if you don't, he wasn't actually helping him. He was just leaving him alone. He wants to basically leave him alone.
I think Geordi's sort of dad reaction is kind of understandable, and I get the impression that, like, none of them have particularly seen each other in that gap, and it is like some dude you worked with 30 years ago, like, saying, like, can you help me and put your own kids in danger? You'd be like, yeah, no, that's not happening. But I think a big turning point for Geordi, for me, was when he saw Data, and I think the acting was, it was really subtle, and I only really noticed it on second watch. But it was just really small things. It was just facial expressions. It was just the look in his face. I think that was really well acted, like, because he was his bestie, really, wasn't he? And I think that kind of, I think that had a big impact on him. It is sort of thinking, yeah, I kind of need to get involved in this now.
And I think also when Sydney said, they are my family, you taught me that. I was really going to say a really stunning and profound moment, that, but I'm going to have to turn the boat race off because it's just
too distracting.
Really, no, it's just making me very sad now. Come on,
but the whole family bit there. So you've got Sydney mention it to Geordi, you know.
I remember what I was going to say now. Sorry, it was clear that I'm going to turn it off because I'll just sulk. Unless they sink. If they sink with someone, yeah. Cambridge, that is. It was the fact that he clearly, there were some things that Geordi was saying that he doesn't trust Starfleet himself. That my dad objected, but that all the starships can talk to each other. And the idea that Starfleet would come after them is that Geordi already has mistrust of Starfleet, and he's trying to protect his daughters, not just because Starfleet would put them in danger, but he as the run of the mill, but he knows something's wrong. That was it. See, profound, brilliant, worth waiting for.
the bit I was going on about was when Sydney sort of parallels what Seven says, I think, a bit later. No, earlier on in the episode or later, I can't remember. But Sydney parallels what Seven says. Basically, she's learned from her father all these tales. You know, this crew is the family that you are now with, and you look after each other. And that's what she's doing. She's on the Titan. That's her family. She's going to look after them, and they're going to look after her. That's the sort of things that her father has instilled in her, which is great. And a bit later on, you actually hear it from Seven as well. Seven was sort of reborn on Voyager, and she grew into her family on the ship. And that's why she keeps looking at it nostalgically when she was flicking through all the spaceships on the view screen. And you've got this whole thing here with Sydney trying to get to her father to understand, right, that she's just doing what he used to do. But he's not seeing that. He's seeing it as a father. I need to protect my daughter. You are now going on the run. I need you to get off the ship and stay with me. Geordi, I can understand what he wants to do. But at the same time, I can also try trying to work out why he isn't actually helping his old friends, or doesn't want to help his old friends until he's actually forced to do so at the end.
Yeah, that is a weird one, I think. But interesting you bring up the Seven of Nine, like saying that's where Voyager's where she found her family. Because like the discussion we've been having in my family is Starfleet the place for Seven? And, you know, my mum and I have been going back and forth over it. And I think it comes down to that, is that she's looking for a family again. That's like the only place where she's known that she has a family. And so she is just trying to find that family again. So I think, yeah, that family, parenthood, all of that is really important in this season of Picard.
The Seven really hasn't, as you said, Seven hasn't had a family since Voyager. I mean, she's been a ranger, and I think they usually work alone or in very, very small teams, and they probably change each every so often. And then she's been with Picard and his sort of crew for a little bit, and then she's been on the Titan where she's not been wanted by the captain. And so she's not felt wanted, so it hasn't felt like a family. Maybe by the end of the season, she'll discovered that she does actually belong on the Titan, and she has got a family on there. I mean, she partly has somebody who looks up to her in Cindy, because she keeps calling her Commander Seven instead of Hanson. So maybe she will develop that sort of family as she goes along towards the end of this season, which would be great for a spin-off show later on, I hope.
Just that, of course, you mentioned the relationship with Raffi, but the idea of belonging, I think, is important for all of them as well, because then you've got Jack, who is still learning who he is, and I'm sure we'll come back to the illness issue, but Shaw's changing as well, and I think the whole Titan will change, particularly. Well, I just love the Shaw geeking over LaForge, and that's always going to be every episode I love Shaw more and more.
I didn't think there was that much Shaw in this episode at all. I mean, I missed having his sort of wit and the way he talks to the other crew. I think they only had that one scene really, which is a highlight for him this whole season. This whole episode, which was, as you said, geeking out in front of Geordi the rest of the time. I think he was just background character. He was to this episode. Andrea, I think I definitely handle.
So Todd Stashwick was bored at an airport this week, and it was inviting questions from the public. And I did. I asked him about what Mira Shaw would be like, and he basically said it would be like me, a nerd from Chicago. And I think that little bit of nerd, I think we've got a little bit of nerd this week, so I was quite pleased with that. So I also quite like getting a response. That made me quite happy this week, so that was good. And the other thing I was going to say is I felt that Raffi and Seven reunion was very, very muted and, like, I don't know, like, awkward almost. It was like, oh, have they, like, fallen out? Because, like, that was a bit like, yeah, all right, yeah, yeah. Like, not bothered. So I found that quite, I thought that wasn't what I expected. I thought that was going to be a bigger deal than it was.
Well, no, I was just going to, like, point out something about Shaw, is that in that briefing table, he was right at the back. Like, it makes no, he's lost, like, I couldn't understand that. Like, Seven was ahead of him on that table. Yeah, I could understand why Picard was at the front, and I guess, yeah, Will being next to, across from him makes sense. But then Shaw right at the back of this briefing table, you're right, like, Shaw's starting to become a bit more of a background character, so I'm just wondering where they're going to take that. That was really all I had to say about that.
That was a good point.
Yeah.
Poor Shaw. We need to start a campaign. Yeah, can he have his shit back, please?
But, yeah, what you were saying about Raffi and Seven is, have they broken up? Is that what we're meant to understand? Like,
Yeah, that's what I mean, that whole exchange when Worf and Raffi and Riker are about to transport off the ship, and Seven says, I'm not coming. Worf says, yes, I'm quite glad that you got not having an ex-lover. Did he say ex-lover or a lover?
I'm practicing deceit.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and so he must know something that there's something going on. Where
he said beforehand about going on missions with ex-lovers.
That was it, ex-lovers, that was it. Right, so therefore, I'm just thinking maybe they have decided to call it a day, but they haven't really let anybody else know. As in the broadcasting, the people that are watching the episode, they've just left it left it linger.
It was probably in the subtitles because I knew.
No, I thought right at the in the first episode when Raffi was wherever she was, she mentioned having a breakup or something like that. And I think we were all hoping that it was part of her undercover character, but maybe that is actually true and that's how we're meant to know. I might have misremembered that or something.
No, that was my memory as well.
That might also explain how Raffi's been acting for the last 3 or 4 episodes, where she seems to be a bit out of character, a bit hyper and all this stuff. And she, because she's not got somebody there to be able to ground her, not been able to talk to anybody, to be able to say, look, you need to come down a bit, you need to slowly come down. But I think that might be why she's been like that. Go on, Izzy.
Well, I think it's Raffi's an interesting character because her actions have meant that everyone that was close to her have kind of been pushed away or are no longer in contact. So maybe that kind of not having the relationship there is something that Raffi really struggles with. And maybe that's the change in character almost. But I think that Worf is going to be really important for that. I can see how their duo is kind of starting to work out and how he's starting to have a positive effect on her. So again, I'm really interested to see how far they take that kind of duo fighting crime kind of business.
Another potential spin-off.
Okay, so something else I wanted to talk about was Jack's character development, because I think this episode was the first episode where he wasn't just really pretentious and annoying. I didn't just kind of want to give him a slap around the face. That might sound bad, but you've got a lot more depth to him, I think, this episode. Suki?
Why do you think he's pretentious and annoying? What have you seen in the last few episodes where you want to give him a slap around the face?
Oh, I don't know. It might just be that, this is going to sound really bad, it might just be the British accent around all the American accents. There's just something about it, his kind of blasé faire, oh, I think I might just blame everyone around me and not look at his own actions. I don't know, just something about him.
So I think one of the things sort of we've discussed for Space Eggsy quite a bit is that we could kind of see him as a sort of Kirkish kind of captain. And I think the fact that they revealed he is a bit of a Kirk fanboy, clearly, it makes perfect sense, really. And I was kind of wondering, does he know his dad's met Kirk and done a bit of adventuring with him? Is he kind of aware of that? Because he did seem quite enthusiastic about that. And they're teasing a little bit of a relationship for him, I think. I think they were planting the seeds of some romantic interest there, I think, which...
He's met and buried Kirk as well.
Yeah, and someone's dug him up.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if we're going to mention that Kirk's burial, somebody's been to Viridian 3 and dug him up because he was at Daystrom. And I'm sure I heard medical noises. I think William Shatner's dreams might be about to come true because, it doesn't look like Kirk's dead.
Oh no, I shouldn't say that.
What? So you think that Kirk's it's not just his remains in there? You think
I got the sense of them sort of boom, boom, old school medically noises, and I don't know if that was just playing with the audience or that was just an accident, but it did kind of seem why are his remains there? Who went there and dug him up?
Why was Picard's remains there?
Ah, well, that's the big question.
And so has Picard. Is it something to do with the Nexus?
I think they're just weird. Oh, sorry, Izzy.
No, I was just going to say, is it every famous captain gets their remains put in the Daystrom station? Is that just like a rite of passage? You've died, your remains go in Daystrom station. I don't know. Maybe that's something they get to look forward to.
Sorry, I forgot to put my hand up.
Go on then.
Are we going to go as far as why they nicked his body and why they want Jack?
I've got an idea on that.
I think we all have.
Okay, go on, well, my theory, we'll go around what theory. My theory is, are they after nanotechnology from Borg? Right, because there must have been some stuff left over, maybe.
That's right.
But then I thought about it now. He's in a synth body now. Right, so they wouldn't have gone for the synth body, but they would have gone for the original remains, which might still have Borg nanotechnology in there. And that's one of the reasons why they're looking for Jack, is because that nanotechnology, when Jack was created, was somehow passed on to Jack, and now they're looking for Jack as well.
Right, Izzy, can you edit podcasts?
I mean, no, not really. Well. No, this could be my debut attempt. What, you want me to edit that out?
No, I was just thinking we could sack Suki because that was rubbish.
Well, let's hear your theory, young lady.
I really have one, really. DNA. We've still got that thing about the spirally, and you can't see this because it's a podcast, but I'm going at the end.
Not this stuff podcast. You're not going we on the podcast, dear.
We.
The tone's not that low.
The way I started in the podcast, yeah, it is very low.
Oh, I remember the bring back Bob. No. I don't know. You may be right, actually, but there's something about the DNA, but the illness as well. Thingy disease, which I wrote down because I can never remember it.
Irrimodic syndrome.
Yeah, I don't think he's got it. That's just too easy a solution as to why all the red things were going on. Oh gosh, I've started something now. Three hands. I think that's linked. There is something in him, and it may be related. The way that the series is going, and it's relating back to like even a counter at Farpoint. It could be something to do with the inner light. You know, something is within Picard that is passed on. I think it's going to be more obscure.
I was just going to say, like, that diagnosis, it doesn't explain the red eyes. I think it would be convenient, but I think there's definitely more going on there. Like, I don't think that that's enough of a reason for what's been happening to Jack.
I was just going to say, the changelings are kind of trying to deal with some kind of disease, aren't they? Is that part of it? Is there some link to...
Well, the disease, was that the man-made virus that was mentioned around the table that was sent off, but then they also sent a cure as well? Is that what you mean? Or is there something else?
Yes, I'm thinking of like Deep Space Nine. Yeah, it was kind of, it was done intentionally, wasn't it, to finish them off?
Right, I just have to say, because this slightly annoyed me, Starfleet didn't send the cure back. It was Odo. I need some justice for Odo right here, okay? Because it just didn't sit right with me. I was like, yeah, they were on a station together and all that, but it was like, Odo did it. Like, come on. You should have some kind of glory for that.
Yeah, but Starfleet takes everybody, you know... Whatever somebody does on their bases, it's there, and they achieve something great or whatever. They'll take the glory for it. They'll say, well, you know, they're Starfleet personnel sort of attached, so we'll take that glory. But going back to Jack, I'm just going on about the way he took down four changelings last week. Wouldn't that be like a Borg thing there? Right, the way he could quickly assimilate and just quickly kill four changelings last week. He's possibly adapting so quickly to these sort of situations. Just took them out quite quickly. So maybe, yeah, I'm still thinking it's all about the Borg. I mean, I might be disproven next week. I mean, because these first six episodes are the ones that have been publicly released already before the series started. And from the seventh episode onwards, nobody knows what's going about to happen. So, yeah. Izzy?
Yeah, that... I mean, I'm starting to see some kind of logic behind the Borg idea, because they did mention Locutus. Obviously, Shaw had that moment in 10 Forward when they all thought they were going to, like, die from being sucked into that gravity well. They have brought that... They did bring that in. So I guess maybe they're kind of trying to give us some hints. So I don't necessarily agree with you, but I'm starting to see where you're coming from, is all I'm saying, Teb.
Suki's been right about too much this series, and I'm not having it again. I think this is to the stage now where they're misleading us a lot, and it's too obvious to be the Borg. Just like at the beginning, it was Brent Spiner's going to be back as Law, and all of a sudden, well, yeah, a bit of him is Law, but he's also B4, and that is superb. And if Data stays on top, I think that's that, because we were expecting Law to be the big baddie, and he's not. I think that's brilliant if they had managed to mislead us this much. So maybe we're going to be surprised again. It was Izzy and then Andrea.
Well, yeah, it was just this Law thing I wanted to question. I mean, with Law's, like, past and what he's done, I can't help but feel that it wasn't a great idea to think, yeah, let's put him back. Let's bring him back into the picture. I just can't help but feel that wasn't a great idea. And maybe that might come back to kind of mess things up a little bit for the crew.
So I feel like Data's overall arc from sort of the very beginning has been about his quest to become more human. And he's now got a body that is as close to human as possible. And Data on his own, as much as he would like to become human, like, there aren't those negative aspects of his personality. Like, we all have darkness in us, we all have the capacity to hate, we all have the capacity to be jealous, we all have the capacity to do cruel things to other people. And I kind of wonder if the end of his arc is that he needs these aspects of other personalities to kind of not be partitioned and become a whole, so he can be as truly human as he would have wanted. And that kind of completes his journey, really. And I'm just wondering if as he is, just as Data, there isn't enough there to form a fully formed human personality, because there's not that presence of darkness and stuff, and to be human you have to have that within you and learn to control it. So I'm curious if there's a reason all of those personalities were put in there.
Yeah, maybe. Deb?
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because Soong made them all, although there was that thing, wasn't it, that was who was first. It was definitely Data was the perfect one. But I think we have to mention how brilliant Brent Spiner was in playing those different personalities, because you knew he didn't even just say I'm Law. You knew he was Law just from the face, and that was absolutely superb. But when they had the hologram of Soong, and I'm sure there's an answer to this, how did Soong know about Lal? Because I thought Soong, I may have missed this because I'm old. Did Soong die? Was he was dead, wasn't he? Before Lal was created? No. Go on, tell me, Andrea.
That's the Soong that put Picard into the his new body.
Oh,
Alton Soong is Alton Soong.
Oh, that's good then. I knew I was going to be daft there, and there'll be a simple answer. But wow, that was good. That was good. And we haven't even seen Lal yet, have we? You know, when I was a big Brent Spiner, I still love Brent Spiner, but when there was the thing about him, about the different characters that he played initially, and that he, you know, he played the Daddy Soong, that they had... it wasn't going to be that way. And also Lal was going to be a woman. Law. He wanted the second paycheck, and this was his big joke at the time. And I just want to message him now and say, how many paychecks did you get for that bit then? You know, it's pretty good, isn't it? He did go into quite detail explaining the law on whether you got a second paycheck for a second character or not.
So I was going to say, I feel like with data as well, I think they've really like riffed on that Sherlock Holmes thing. It's a little bit meta, like Sherlock Holmes is like, was notorious for having those false deaths, and they keep giving us those false deaths. And obviously, because they've kind of very much set him in that sort of Sherlock Holmes role, they had to bring Moriarty back, which I think everyone was expecting probably to be a bigger part of the story arc. But I think that's his bit done, really. And it was a nice little cameo and a nice callback. But I also think in a lot of ways that's quite obscure for a casual viewer. So we've had him back, but it feels like a bit of a minimal one. But I did like his line about pathetic old warriors. I felt that very, very on brand for this season.
That's just what I mean about that the big baddie was going to be Lore. I think they're we've been tricked a bit. I hope we've been tricked, because like we knew certain characters were going to come, and we were saying, oh, I kind of wish I didn't know. So I think we hopefully we've been misled a bit, and we'll be surprised that we were expecting Lore when we haven't got. Hopefully, we haven't just got Lore, and we haven't got the obvious anymore. Like Moriarty, we're expecting to be more of a role. So, yeah, I think it's going to be exciting. I'm ready to be shocked. Suki?
I think most of Moriarty's role, the actor's role, was all in the trailer. Right? So you saw the trailer and he's there, and whatever he does in the trailer was just, I'd say, about less than a minute extra footage from what there was in the trailer. He's just, I know they built him up to be a big main bad, and he's just a small cameo. But it was nice to see him back again. Is he?
Yeah, I have three things to say on that Moriarty scene. One, I think they did a really good job of kind of merging like that way back in that first episode of TNG and like where we are now with Picard. Sometimes when they do those like throwback things, they can be a bit, you know, meh, and you're like, well, was that really needed? But actually, I thought that one was spot on. I really liked it. And then my other thing I wanted to say, and this is kind of linked, I find it hard to believe that Riker has perfect pitch. Like, he just suddenly, he heard that note and he was like, yeah, that's an F sharp. Like, for someone who spent 7 seasons not great at playing the trombone or whatever it was, I just find it hard to believe he had perfect pitch to know that that was the tune. And then that just finishing the tune, that was probably recognisable anyway, is going to make, like, Moriarty, like, this security system, this Moriarty just disengage. Like, yeah, I can recognise Pop Goes the Weasel. Does that mean that I'm going to be able to get into the instrument station? I don't know. It was good. And then I was like, hang on, wait a minute. Let me think about this further. Suki?
So that bit with Pop Goes the Weasel, yeah, it was a lovely callback to the first episode, as you said. Great, fantastic. And I loved it, seeing the old flashbacks there. I think the whole thing with the disabling the AI was done by Data Law, the manifest, whatever. He created Moriarty hologram there as protocol to make sure nobody attacked. But he also put that stuff in. But he also knew that Riker would be the only one that'd be able to possibly. No, I mean, Worf ain't gonna know Pop Goes the Weasel. I'm pretty sure Raffi ain't going to know Pop Goes the Weasel unless she sang it to her kid when he was a baby. But Riker would always remember his first meeting with Data. And to make sure that Izzy didn't get into the Daystrom Institute, he made sure that he was only recognisable by Riker's whistle and the way he does it. So Izzy did he, right? He'd go, oh, that's not voice recognition. But when Riker does it, oh, that is Riker doing Pop Goes the Weasel. There you go, disabled. There you go. That's my theory on why Izzy would never get into the Daystrom Institute.
Fair enough. Andrew, I think you had your hand up. Was there?
I'm just patiently waiting to talk about ship. So obviously the Fleet Museum. We had the HMS Bounty, which I think as soon as we saw the title, I think we were all kind of expecting some kind of Search for Spock Voyage One kind of callback, and we kind of at least they bothered to explain how it got there. I think particularly as they're in a kind of mutiny situation, it's them against Starfleet. It seems quite fitting plot-wise for sort of the Titan crew situation. And we had a stolen cloaking device, which is a nice callback to the Enterprise incident, where Scotty nicked a Romulan cloaking device, so it has happened before. We saw the Enterprise A, which Jack got quite excited about. We saw the Voyager, we saw the Defiant. USS New Jersey threw us, because I'm like, I don't know that ship. Why don't I know that ship? What was that ship in? And I cannot find any previous reference to that ship, so I don't know if that's thrown in there to confuse us and send us kind of searching through the internet and thinking like, but I have no knowledge of the USS New Jersey, and I looked it up and I still can't find any knowledge. Sookie?
I was just going to say, maybe it's something to do with Terry Metalis, and his name's popped up on various planets. It might be Terry Metalis' hometown. You never know. I don't know. Go on, Andrea.
So I very much feel like I think this is more than just fan service. And I think what was really essential is the fact that they ditched the transponder, and then it's like, well, they can still find you because all the ships are connected and can communicate. But we have this fleet of ships which clearly won't be connected and can't communicate. So my kind of wish list is that Seven is going to fly Voyager, Worf's going to fly the Defiant, and Jack's going to fly the Enterprise. Now, I don't know if I'm going to get that, but that is deity. That is what I want in the finale, please.
Yeah, just quickly on the whole, like, they're all connected on a net. That feels a bit Borgy to me. Was that? Am I the only one that got that vibe from it? Like, it felt very Borg-like, and it feels like it isn't necessary. Like, maybe, like, yeah, was it set up by the changelings that had, like, taken over Starfleet so that if something like this happened, they knew where the ship is? Or maybe it's so that if another Voyager situation happened, then they could find them easier? It feels too much like a Borg kind of setup for it to be a Starfleet kind of setup to me.
It's like World Wide Web. That's what we've got, isn't it? Facebook, yeah. Twitter, yeah.
Speaking of, I'm pretty sure that there are cars that have something built into them, so like they can be found. So, like, from a technology point of view, it doesn't seem that far a reach that they kind of know where the others are. Like, it doesn't, but I feel like they've dropped that in for a very clear reason and then shown us lots of ships that aren't part of that, and all the other ships are going to be in the same place at the same time. So subtle. Sookie.
It's GPS, isn't it? It's basically a GPS system for everyone, so they can find each ship at the same time. Maybe it is a direct thing from when Voyager went missing. The moment they decided they're going to put this technology in, so therefore they can be able to communicate. But doesn't it need another ship or a space station to be close by to be able to use it?
This is relevant since I've left a bag on St. Pancras Station. And because I've got an Apple tag in my pocket of the bag, I can tell exactly where it is. I still can't get it back at the moment, but I know exactly where it is. So I don't think it's going to be as simple as a GPS. I think it is, you know, we've got our fear at the moment is in our world as it is today. There's a fear of intelligent AI, which we've got with the data law character. And also a fear of how reliant we are on data and how easily it is hacked from hostile countries. Yeah, Russia, China, we're constantly saying, the fear of terrorist attacks that way. And Star Trek tends to base... I'm talking off the top of my head, you can probably tell. I'm being polite because we have... issue with us, so maybe it is something that's playing on our fear of conspiracies and attacks on the basis of our reliance on technology.
What you just, like, that does make a lot of sense for me, because what I had to do a GCSE English, I had to do a speech to get an award, and I decided to do my speech on Star Trek. And it was basically, I did it around the idea that Star Trek was just basically holding up a mirror to reality, and it put the worries of what, like, the people going through at the time into this future world where it seemed more like a safe space to explore these kind of ideas. So maybe, yeah, you're right, Deb, and it's the idea that we take what we're worried about today and we see how maybe that plays out in the future, and we can explore, like, maybe here are the upsides of it. We can find ships if they go missing. A downside if Starfleet gets taken over and you have one ship that's trying to, like, fix everything, then that could be an issue that they're much more easily tracked.
I want to hear your speech. But all good fantasy and sci-fi is allegory, and I think that's the beauty of it. And we shouldn't talk about other ones, but Battlestar Galactica, I think, was amazing at that. The way that the opposition turned literally into suicide bombing at one point, and you could be tricked by allegory and in a way, and challenged by views and ideas that you're not expecting. And, you know, Picard, I think, I'm not sure the last series worked very well, but I liked it as a huge allegory on fear and acceptance, maybe. Yeah, but yeah, healing, and it was all to do with that, I think. But I'd have to watch it again. But I thought there was a lot more depth to it, and maybe it didn't work because of the criticism. But that's what's superb about it. And not many. I know my dad always says, "Oh, well, that's not," because he loves space. And when I talk about Star Trek, that's not real space. That's not real science. And you go, well, yeah, but look at the number of people that work for NASA and for the European Space Agency who were Star Trek fans and were inspired by it and the ideas. So yay Star Trek. But yeah, I want to hear your speech.
As do we all.
Yeah. So something I only picked up on my second watch was that as, like, the different ships came up and Seven was going through them with Jack, is that the series that they came from, or, you know, that kind of thing, their theme came, like, was playing behind it whilst that ship came up. And I didn't realise that until my second, because I was watching it the first time and I was like, wow, this is really impactful. Why is it? Is it just because it's the cool starships? And then I realised the second go around that, oh no, it's because their themes are playing. And it's just so much more of a statement, I think.
I think it was interesting, though, that he kind of recognised all of those other ships, including the USS New Jersey, that a room full of Trekkies didn't recognise, and ships from the same era, like the Defiant, but didn't know Voyager. And he kind of, as that being, you would have thought it returned, like, from it had been further than any other ship anywhere, and, like, does nobody talk about that? Is that being kind of swept under the carpet, or it seemed odd that he would know about Kirk that was, like, 100-odd years before his birth and not know about something much more current. I found that, but know about the Defiant. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was just for script purposes so Seven could kind of talk about it in quite an emotional fashion, but I did find that an odd thing. I was thinking, have people forgotten Voyager?
Forgotten what? No, I'm being. No, who is it that said Terry Metellus probably grew up in New Jersey as a guest? Which one of you? Guy would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that yes, good point, Andrea. Sorry, I was distracted by suddenly Googling to see whether he really did go up forever.
That's another
Jersey.
Point for me.
So another thing I noticed.
Maybe Voyager was a bit hidden because it was an error. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's seen as a failure. I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, Izzy.
No, I was just going to say another thing I noticed is Picard's Enterprises weren't in the museum. And of course, we know that the D crashed, like so the main body blew up and then the saucer crashed on Viridian 3. So maybe that's why. But then the E, the last time we saw that was in Star Trek Prodigy. Like, it's one of the Yeah, it's one of the ships that's seen like going in when they're during when the device is all kind of going off. You see Picard's Enterprise E. So I think it was a bit interesting that that wasn't in the museum. Andrea?
What's in Hangar 12? I've just got Hangar. Is it Hangar 12? I think it was Hangar 12.
Yeah.
It's like, what's in the ship? It's like, oh, what about that in Hangar 12? And he's like, shut up. Like, just put a sock in it. And I am really curious to, because I feel like there should be something relevant in there.
I thought it would be the bounty, but yeah.
What do you mean, Hangar 12? I must have missed that. What was that?
There's a conversation between sort of Geordi and his daughter where they were talking about, like, what was there. And she kind of went, well, Dad, like, kind of, what about whatever's in Hangar 12? And Geordi was like, yeah, shut up. So what's in there?
Okay, so you remember earlier we were all going on about the ships are all connected. Maybe the earliest ship is not connected, has not had the technology put on there. And the earliest ship is the one that was missing, which is the one that I thought should have been there from the beginning, which was Enterprise A, Archer ship, right? And that wasn't there. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
That was there. I'm pretty sure. Was there.
Was it there?
And at the NX-01 reef, it was there.
Yeah, I was
going to sound
the refit. People are like
wounded
by that.
Oh, okay.
-1, Tuki.
No, okay. I'm still ahead anyway.
Another thing I liked is that the whale incident is just a common thing. Jack goes, like, they see the HMS Bounty and he goes, oh, yeah, the whale thing. That's like, it's just common known, isn't it? And I think that's a nice touch, I think. Tuki?
But the HMS Bounty as well, yeah, great. The whale thing, yeah, everybody seems to know about it. But the fact that they've managed to dig her up, or get her from the bottom of the ocean, and then Worf goes, superior Klingon technology. That's why it survived.
Yeah. Well, because doesn't Jack go, yeah, it went, because Seven goes, oh, yeah, it took them a while to find it. And it's like the idea that it went missing. So maybe, yeah, it was cloaked underneath. In the San Francisco waters, I think, is it? Yeah. Maybe that's why it took so long. But I think I really liked the Worf-Riker dynamic as well. Apparently I'm just liking all the duos with Worf, I think, is what we learned from this.
You are a wise woman.
I thought it was a good way to kind of bring in this comical relief. Like, cause we've got a lot of, like, tearjerker, like, throwbacks, and then you've got this, like, the kind of comic thing coming in, and I think I think it was there for, like, those TNG fans to maybe, so they could have, like, a look at that. Andrea?
I was gonna say, I really liked sort of when Worf was promoting his new approach and his pacifism, that the last thing Riker said as he disappeared in the transporter was, we're all gonna die. Like, was it a nice little moment, I thought.
What I've been trying to work out is, like, so this is like a big change that's come over Worf, and I'm like, what could have led to this? And I'm thinking maybe Jadzia. I'm thinking maybe that's led to his more, like, pacifist approach, and he's trying to take a lot more, like, time to think about stuff. I don't know. I thought that was probably the only thing that I could think of that probably would lead to him taking a more, like, pacifist route. Because, yeah, that, and I've been thinking about that a lot. I've been like, maybe, because obviously Jadzia happened in season 6, right at the end of season 6 of Deep Space Nine. And then we have another season of Deep Space Nine where it was Ezra. Yeah. So, and we saw, and Worf, like, clearly was affected by Jadzia's death, but maybe what's happened in the years since that ended has had a lot more impact on him than it first seemed. So that's what I've been thinking about a lot, because it's a big change, isn't it, for, like, a Klingon who's been so, like into the war thing, and then he's suddenly like, I'm taking a pacifist approach to this.
Isn't there Klingon monks, or wasn't there Klingon monks, or some like a pacifist society within Klingon, where thinking Discovery that they went to a certain planet. Andrea seems to be nodding.
Yeah, so they went to where the time crystals were,
and that's
they were
it, like, yeah.
Klingon monks.
Oh, were they all Klingons? Because I thought that they'd. Maybe I've misunderstood that. I thought that Ash's kid had just been put there, and that it was all sorts. But I didn't realise it was just a Klingon monastery.
It was a Klingon colony, wasn't it? Klingon Klingon colony. So yeah, it was all Klingons. I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay, is there anything else that someone's burning to share, and they just haven't had the chance yet? Andrew, should we start with you?
So, little spots. The Genesis device. I spotted that at Daystrom. That was a nice little nod. The attack tribble. I feel like deserves its own spin-off, to be quite honest. What else was there? I think I saw those Reman weapons from Nemesis. You know, the ones that kind of disintegrate people. I think I saw that. And I think I saw a Borg thing, but I don't know what it's called. But I think it's a Borg thing that's in Borg ships. And obviously the bodies that were there. I didn't see this. I did see someone trying to say that Beverly's candle was there. But I think that
was a bit... wishful thinking.
But yeah, I definitely think Attack Tribble was one of my favourite little things to be lurking in there, so I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, just only that Vedic was saying about how terrible it was for all the changelings to have to wear the faces of the Federation, and again wondering why she always wore the same face and did the wind change on her, maybe, because that's what my mum always told me. Don't pull that face or the wind will change.
But Amanda Plummer, she's been great all season. She's played this on the right side of being OTT, but not being really on over the edge. And she's just been brilliant. And there's been loads of comments online that I've seen where they've just compared it with her father. And this is her father would have been really proud of her portrayal as Vedic.
I saw like a comment saying that it didn't make sense for Vadik to shoot one of her comrades on board, but because that happens, doesn't it? They like saying, but we haven't got time to do that stuff, and she just goes like kill him. But I think it kind of shows that she's starting to it's becoming quite like an unbalanced person, who isn't quite as in control as she can only see the end goal, I think, and she's starting to be that anything that comes in her way of that end goal is going to be eliminated. So I want to see how that plays out and how, as she's becoming more and more unbalanced, how that's going to affect everyone else. Suki?
I'm just going to go for my quick points quickly. It was great to see Micah Burton as Alandra LaForge joining the family of Star Trek. There's Deanna Troi right at the end. Now, does anybody think that she's a changeling? I mean, the fact is, Riker was the one that was captured, and they're using Deanna as a ploy for him to turn. But what if Worf or Raffi had been captured? They're the ones that decided, where I'm going to try and stop them so you guys could get away. I think Izzy had her hand up.
I would much prefer if it turned out that Deanna was a changeling, because I do not like this idea that Deanna's become the damsel in distress again. I think back in like the beginning of TNG, that was like the whole vibe, and I'd be really, I think, disappointed if that's all they had for Deanna, like for this season, is that she was going to become the damsel in distress, and maybe that. Like your theory would make me happier, and it makes a lot more sense, I think.
So I think it was in the last episode, the plan was they were going to like look up everyone who was like an associate, a friend of Picard, who like he might turn to. So I think there's a bit of a short list of people they've potentially picked up. So I think Troi was one of them. And obviously if they've got Riker, then that's the person they need to use there. I thought Laris might be a person they would pick up, and maybe I've captured there. So I did kind of wonder if they'd collected like a few people to try and improve their position, and that was just the person they chose to kind of go, look who we've got. But I have also written changeling question mark, so I don't know, possibly.
Yeah, that I could just imagine that they were like, oh, who should we collect? Collect a few, put them in some kind of holding bay, and then Radek just calls it, right, we took Riker. Bring out Deanna, okay, because I think she's the one that's going to help us crack this. And they're like trying to, and like I can just imagine them having like all these plans on like on a board, and they just decide like which one, like, yeah, plan Deanna, okay, we're going with that one. Just, like, bring her out with the holding bay, and they've got all these random people that could be connected with Picard. Suki?
I just want to carry on, which is Sydney becoming a pilot instead of an engineer. That caused a rift between her and her father, because I just don't understand why he's got a sort of beef with her, because you would support your kids into whatever career path that they're going to, but because she went and became a pilot instead of an engineer, he sort of disowned her, which is what I'm thinking. Is he?
I think that's a good point you raised, and that was a bit, maybe there's something deeper. But what I did like was the moment where she was like, why do you think I crashed like my speeders so often? It's so that we could like fix them together. And I thought that was a very realistic moment, because I can remember like being a child and thinking, oh, it's the weekend, I'm gonna do gardening with my dad. Now, I never like properly enjoyed the gardening. It was more like the doing the gardening with my dad that I enjoyed. So I thought that they got that like spot on, and I thought that was a really like touching, realistic moment that was really important for kind of their development and fixing that relationship, so that, I don't know, maybe there's going to be some kind of like team up at the end where they like, it's George, like obviously we had the fix, like the team up when he's helping them put in the cloaking device, but maybe there's going to be some kind of thing that like he's sorting out their warp core while she's like on the other end of the line, like ready, and he's like go for it, and she just like hits some kind of like propulsion button, and it's like that kind of moment. I don't know, I'd love if we could see that.
So sure would be I can't use the words I want to use.
Steve has given us permission to do whatever.
Yes,
sure would be very excited if that would happen.
Oh yeah, going back to Sydney, there's that buddy little romance between her and Jack, where they're looking at each other on a couple of occasions, and I think the other sister spots it as well, and then you've got Geordi walking out, basically telling Jack to stay away from his daughter, so he spotted it as well, so that's from there. The fact that you got Chekhov's cloaking device, which is where Jack and Seven are discussing all the ships, and they mentioned the cloaking device, and of course half an hour later in the episode Jack and Sydney go off and steal it, so it was mentioned there and used as the Chekhov's cloaking device at the end. Worf and Chateau Picard, and Chateau Picard is described as sour mead
tart.
Beverly gets to hug both Worf and Geordi, which is great, because she hasn't seen them for 20-odd years, and because she's now sort of reconciled with Riker and Picard, she is obviously going to hug both Worf and Geordi. I'm just wondering when Data becomes sort of fully sentient as well, would she hug him as well? But that's the end of my notes. Is there anything you'd like to add, Izzy?
Just one thing. I was handed a note during this conversation that said, Andrea spotted a Borg vinculum in the station. So that was the Borg thing you spotted. So I don't know, maybe that helps you. So shall we move on to Lights Out 5?
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
Okay, should we start with Andrea? What were your Lights Out 5?
So in a lot of ways, it threw a lot at the episode. There was a lot of nostalgia, there was a lot of things introduced. But in other ways, it felt like, compared to the last two episodes, it was a bit like not that much happened in real sort of plot terms. So I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going to give it a 4, like that's out of 5.
Okay, Deb?
I think I loved it. I was going to give it a 5, but I'll give it 4.5 because I gave 5 last week, and could do with more Shaw. I really like Shaw. 4.5.
Suki?
Yes, I was going to give it 5, but now because Deb's just mentioned that there was not hardly any Shaw in there, I'm going to knock it half a point off as well. So it's going to be 4.5. Before you give your marks, could you just ask your dad what he thought?
Dad, what did you think?
I can come on and say hello if you want.
Hello!
Hello!
Hi, hi. I thought it was amazing. I thought that this was what Picard was going to be like right from the beginning of season one. And now that it is like this, I am a very, very happy man indeed. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 because it was just everything that I wanted Picard to be. It was glorious.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. Part of like what I liked about watching it the second time is how many times I saw you kind of like chuckle to yourself or like pointing things out to me and be like, oh yeah. So I thought that was very cool.
And as the father of two daughters, I do get where Geordie was coming from, but also he's totally wrong. They're grown up, so they've made their own decisions in life. They just need to crack on, and he needs to let them get on with it.
Oh, awesome. You're a brave man.
I just can't wait to get rid of mine out of the house.
I've tried to do that with my kids. I've still got 2 here. kept two. Thanks, Steve. Get lost now.
All right, bye.
Toodles.
Yeah. Your call.
Yeah, I think I'm going to join my father. Hurts me to say it. But yeah, I'm going to give it 5 lights just because I enjoyed it. It's been my favourite of the season so far. And I just think there are so many things that like kind of took me back to when I first started watching Star Trek. And it was like a nice reminder. So I think, yeah, that's why I gave it 5. Awesome. Have you got, has anyone got listener feedback? I was going to pull that in.
Can I just say, before we do that, it was announced by Alex Kurtzman that there were going to be some Star Trek announcements coming up. So I just wanted the, to mention that. So we can all be very excited. Hopefully there will be some new series being announced. And also there's a rumour of films, possibly character-based films or maybe even short episodes like Lorca, maybe. We haven't mentioned him yet. Come on.
I was going to say that people, if they need that on their bingo cards, then it snuck in towards the end.
Absolutely. I've got a couple Jason here just to...
So, some listener feedback now. Tom Turlow said, I'm afraid my foreign exile means once more you'll be denied my pearls of wisdom regarding this week's episode. Try to keep strong, people. I'll be home soon. So.
We are missing his feedback.
Oh, fair enough then.
I'll add Jack, our Jack. And he says, I hope this is a reference to Star Trek 4, the one with the whales, is a film that should never be slept on. That's my initial reaction, and I was not disappointed. Star Trek really stretches believability sometimes. In DS9's past tense, they make out that by 2024, mega-billionaires treat the poor as scum, which will lead to riots. But Geordi LaForge both got married and had kids. I need a minute here. He's processing that, Jack. My cold, jaded heart melted when Raffi and Seven reunited. One-line beauty. TNG, DS9 and Voyager characters meet in a transporter room on a 4th spin-off which references the original series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise and Koida, Strange New Worlds and Prodigy. Screw everyone who posted spoilers for this all over Twitter. Where's a Crossfield rebuilt? The refit NX class is basically Star Trek Starry Night. It's that beautiful. Shame I watched on my iPad, as that's a detail only the eagle-eyed can see on something that small. MB, someone put a Paramount Plus app on UK boxes so I can watch Trek on my obscenely large 65-inch 4K TV. Okay, don't need to brag there, Jack. Kirk's body is in the Black Ops station. Also, I saw a label for an Archer. As this is Trek, I guess it's unsung hero Jonathan Archer. If it was Jeffrey Archer, oh boy, I'll join the angry mob attacking. Then Picard's body, Captains of the Enterprise, is a weird thing to collect. Jack looks at his many expensive Trek XL6 figures. What does that mean? What does that mean, Trek XL6 figures? I'm not sure what that means. Dr. Moriarty has to come back. I'm not desperate for it, but here his debut was barely longer than it was in the trailer. The acting from Daniel Davis was hardly a highlight, but was a welcome treat for long-term fans. Overall, I give the Bounty 4.8 starships out of 5. I'd give it a full 5 marks, but with no Discovery or Lower Decks reference, it missed out on becoming the Star Trek answer to Avengers, Infinity War and Endgame, which shared its name with Voyager's finale, which is famous for being the only non-TNG episode to reference Dr. Pulaski. Hopefully next week, March 30th, the first contact day, while in Los Angeles, I can get to Paramount Studios, and if there's much, if any, Trek content there still, check this out, we'll receive it. Two very long flights in first class, so Star Trek, check this out, guest star. Right, so he's off to Los Angeles, Paramount Studios, is Jack.
Wow. Please give us the gossip, Jack.
I'll be there first and for everything.
So I've got Dave K, who says, firstly, as soon as I saw the title Bounty, I thought about the ship from Star Trek IV. This is a difficult episode to review. Was the nostalgia lovely? Very much so. It'll be a different moment for every fan, but for me, it was the Defiant and the DS9 theme which made my chest swell. So that was great. But the plot itself wasn't up to much. I felt like the episode lacked the energy or pace of the last couple. I'll be very interested in how fans reacted to Geordi here. I really struggled to believe that the dynamic, energetic chief engineer would happily take a desk job at a museum, and whilst I understand the narrative themes and reason, found his reluctance to help Picard unrealistic. Brent Spiner was astounding performing all his different characters. However, after his strong roles in the first two seasons, I'm not sure I needed him here. One for the fans, but for me, a little step back after the last couple of strong episodes. 3 lights.
Right, I've got Seedler, the Seedler. This is how to do fan service right, not least because there's always been a section of the fandom that nerded out about the ships as much as the more conventional characters. And for once, it felt nice to see that recognised on screen as well.
Okay, we've got David Paul, and he's also got some audio feedback, which I'll slot in a moment. And he says, just viewed, oh my God, it's 5 out of 5 this week. I guess 2 things about Daystrom Institute, but I had them the wrong way around. Good to see more new old friends. Nice continuity from Insurrection. What's so interesting about a certain family's DNA? Defiant Cloak 2. And Dave Kitchen comes back from the Doctor Who show in his book, or even deeper cut would have been in the Pegasus. Side note, very possible the Romulans asked for the Defiant Cloak back after the Dominion War was over? Not sure. But Dave did send some audio feedback, and here it is now.
Hello all, Davey Paul, a.k.a. David Paul Morgan here. Peace and long life. So, Series 3 is examining the backstories of our heroes, with Jean-Luc discovering he has a son, Beverly, Raffi and Seven combating their loneliness, and Riker grappling with the loss of his child and difficulties in his relationship with Diana. But as we know, your ship family is as important as your biological family. Vadic is clearly channeling Vogon Captain's crew management techniques and is totally ruthless. The introduction of the more detailed shape-shifting to allow them to pass for solids has been a very interesting development. But why are they obsessed with Picard and Jack? Anyway, back to the Daystrom station to try and work out what the changelings were really after. I thought that Moriarty was going to be the AI security bot and that Data, in some form, was going to be on the memory stick key. But having the new synthetic be obsessed with Moriarty and the solution being something only Riker would have known was stunning. Naturally, the ship museum was very close to the Daystrom Institute, as they were hoping to be there and back in an hour. Hasn't Laverne Burton aged well, and what a great idea to have his own daughter as part of the Starfleet family. Also, nice continuity from Insurrection. Geordi seems to have retained the regrown biological eyes from that film. I'm still enjoying the character pauses between the action, and especially enjoyed when Jack learned about some things he inherited from his father. I was hoping Jack's visions might have been more mystical, but they're symptoms of the iromodic syndrome that has plagued Picard. I wonder why the Insurrection planet didn't cure that one. I really enjoyed Jack and Seven geeking out over the vintage starships and the opportunity for self-examination. I have to say that I spotted Junior LaForge's Chekhov invisibility dialogue, and seeing how neatly it inspired Jack's ideas to nick the Klingon cloaking device, although I thought that the Defiant was also a cloaked ship. Another funny scene was Captain Shaw fanboying over Chief Engineer LaForge, echoing maybe LaForge and Scotty in Relics. So, back to the Daystrom Institute. I was uncertain about Spiner coming back again after multiple deaths. However, the new Sung synthetic being android as an amalgam gestalt family of the positronic systems of Law, Data, B4 and Lal was very cleverly done. Which brings us to the cliffhanger. I hope that Diana gets more to do than just be emotional leverage against Riker. But what another great changeling double cross. Ruthless. So from earlier, Vadic and the changelings didn't want to steal a weapon. They wanted the remains of Picard's original body. And also their need for Jack now makes more sense. My fanboy theory is that the Founders want the nanotech left by the Borg in Picard's bio-body, or were hoping it would be inherited by Jack, maybe to make a Borg Founder assimilating hybrid species. I said 5 lights out of 5 on Twitter, but for this review I'm going to go down to 4.5 lights out of 5 to give me somewhere to go. Live long and prosper.
Cheers for that, Dave. We've also had our regular feedback from Steve Hatcher from the Hoover's Doctor Who group. And here's that.
Hello, this is Stephen Hatcher from the Hoover's Doctor Who group with some thoughts about Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 6, The Bounty. Well, a bounty. Something given or occurring in generous amounts. Very much an appropriate title for this episode for the long-term Trek fan who's been enjoying Season 3 of Picard as much for its references to the Star Trek we watched in the past as for its tight, gripping storytelling. The first 5 episodes have drip-fed us those little bits of continuity with previous series. We started with Beverly, then Will, and briefly Deanna. Then, of course, 7 of 9, then Geordi's daughter, Worf, the Ferengi, mention of Wesley, the changelings, Wolf 359, the Farpoint Space Jellyfish, Rolaren. Bit by bit, over those first 5 episodes, we've been tossed a morsel at a time. Some of them pretty big morsels, but morsels nonetheless. All along, we've been teased with mentions of Geordi's Space Museum and the Daystrom Institute. Surely there had to come a point at which the continuity dam would burst, and we would either be carried along in a tide of nostalgic loveliness or drowned in an inundation of overblown fan service. Well, episode 6 delivers that bounty. The barrage bursts, and to my delight, the engulfing waters are a warm golden treacle of sweet joy. I think I need a bit of a breath after that. In the bounty, Worf and Raffi join the Titan. Then, together with Riker, they set off to see what they can find out by breaking into the Daystrom Institute. Realising that the Titan needs to acquire some technology to stay out of sight, the rest of the gang head to the Fleet Museum, hoping to ask Geordi LaForge to help out. but Geordi is in no mood to cooperate and is in fact very angry with Picard for getting his daughter into danger. Picard agrees to leave young Sydney with her dad, but she will hear none of it. Of course, this being the Fleet Museum, Seven takes the opportunity to show Jack Crusher some of the classic ships on display, including the Enterprise A, the Defiant, Voyager and the Bounty, the Klingon bird of prey that Kirk and his mob stole in Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. Jack is clearly blown away by the sight of all these lovely old ships, no doubt helped by the snatch of appropriate theme tune that accompanies each one, and he promptly sneaks off to nick the cloaking device from the Bounty, which Geordi then agrees to help install. Riker, Worf and Raffi find the Daystrom station heavily guarded, but manage to get aboard to discover that the AI running the place is Data, or at least an android that looks a lot like him. Worf and Raffi manage to escape with their plastic pal, but Will stays behind to fight off the guards, gets captured and taken to Vadik's ship, where, under torture, he refuses to talk. Then Vadik plays her trump card. She has Deanna as a prisoner too. Well, I'm not too sure about that. Is it Deanna, or is it just another changeling pretending to be Deanna? Time will no doubt tell. On the Titan, Geordi manages to revive the android, who does turn out to be Data. But not just Data. Lore and Dr. Sung and Lal and any number of other related personalities, all of whom have been played by Brent Spiner, have been downloaded into this body too. From Data, we discover the changelings have stolen Picard's original organic body, the one that died in the first series of Star Trek Picard, which is a bit of an odd thing to have been in a museum, if you think about it, but nevertheless. Well, there we are. So it's been an episode in which the pace has really stepped up. Layers of the mystery have been uncovered, revealing more layers beneath, and most, if not necessarily all, of the main characters are in place. It's been a positive tsunami of continuity, but I've absolutely loved it. I think I need to go for a little sit down now.
And here's some light feedback from Kat. Kat's review, curmudgeon edition. For me, one of the highlights of the episode was Vadik. She's giving Goldacat a run for his money as best Trek villain. Other highlights. Worf, I have said it. Fanboy Shaw and Geordi's compliments on how well maintained Titan is despite a hard week. Geordi and Sydney, particularly as they work with Data. Worf and the Tribble was funny. Riker's memories of Data and the musical cue. Unpopular opinion. Must we see Spiner again? I like the guy and I love Data, but I'm sick of seeing him in Picard. Does Iromodic syndrome give you the fighting powers of Jackie Chan? I think Jack still has something else going on. This episode seemed to be ticking off plot points. Why is Moriarty able to wield a real weapon in this facility with all its unique treasures? Geordi protecting his daughters at the possible cost to the galaxy seems out of character. His attitude about Sydney is bad character writing. Sydney is a member of Starfleet. Geordi should know her life can be on the line at any time. Black site is something of a misnomer. A black site is where nefarious actions take place, not where objects are kept. Editor nitpick. Seven's recollections of Voyager was nice. Jack and his interactions with everyone was another highlight. The actor is charming in the role. Why would the Fleet Museum keep the cloaking device on board the Bounty? The security team sure took a long time to get to Riker, Worf and Raffi. Beverly is brave and wise. Why could those traits only have come from Jean-Luc Picard? Seriously. The scene of Data and his other inhabitants spell trouble. Predictable trouble. At the last minute, Law will manifest and endanger the mission. Of course he will. My present theory, co-formulated with my friend Ange, species 8472 have merged with the Dominion to conquer the Federation and the Borg. 3 out of 5 lights, there is not enough shore. Cheers for that, Cat.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt.
Okay, so now we're doing Who's the Red Shirt? We're killing off this podcast. Okay? I think I'm gonna have to vote for Deb. I'm what? Sorry, Jeff. It was the rowing at the beginning. You threw me off. I'm getting
but a fellow Oxford born person.
I'm sorry, but it has to be done. Suki?
Yes, I'm going to vote Deb as well. Right. Basically, for the exact same reason, in and out, concentrate on the podcast. You know, you've got a job to do. You told us you were being paid to do this like a couple of episodes ago, and now you're not even concentrating on your job.
I'm jet-lagged.
Just because you've been gallivanting off to Italy all over the place and leaving us poor souls here. There's no need. Deb, another vote. Sorry.
Andrea?
Firstly, Deb, you don't get jet lag flying home from Italy. I'm sorry, but that's not pain. I'll look into the ins and outs of how jet lag works, but not like that. So I was going to nominate someone who's not actually here this week, but I was going to nominate Izzy's mum, because I cannot look at Vadik anymore without thinking of Kevin and Perry.
Patterson.
But do you know what? It's not here to defend itself, so I'm going to just nominate Deb.
Deb's our venture then.
Oh, I still get a go.
Yeah, you're still going to go.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but I could completely get the Kevin. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to nominate Izzy because she's been too good and she's showing the rest of us up.
I was going to say that myself, but, you know, her first time on the podcast, and we do need her back, you know, in the future. All right, so there's no point in alienating her right now and killing her off.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much.
How do we get rid of Deb?
Hold on a minute, cardboard Jason votes for Suki.
Her remains have to be stored in the Daystrom Institute for theft later on.
Oh, as long as you nick me back.
Okay.
Get it
just
get an overcomplicated plan to wear, break Deb out of the Daystream Institute. Oh,
death by attack triple.
Oh no!
Oh yes,
that is gonna be okay.
That's scary because I have actually got two tribbles that Andrea gave me in the house, so they may just be sleeping attack tribbles.
You sure there's only two there? You sure there ain't suddenly four, maybe six, maybe eight, without you noticing? Right, just before we go, Izzy, how did you enjoy your experience of hosting Trek This Out?
Oh, it was great. I had a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure, our pleasure. We're glad to have you back again quite soon. Right, sign us out, Bab.
Okay, you've been listening to Trek This Out. We've been reviewing episode 6. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Laters. See you, Steve.
Bye.
Andrew, you keep putting your hand up and then putting it down again.
I'm not. I'm just chewing my pen.
She's biting her nails.
Fair enough.